Hello, thanks for joining for another episode of Turkey Book Talk with me, William Armstrong. In this podcast, I talk to authors about newly released books on Turkey and its neighbourhood. Subscribe to Turkey Book Talk on iTunes, Podbean or Stitcher, or follow via the Facebook page, or subscribe at my website, armstrongwilliam.wordpress.com. If you're a fan of this podcast and you want to show your support for it and me, you can do so via my Patreon account, making a small or large monetary donation on a per episode basis. You can find details of how to do that through all the Turkey Book Talk pages. But now I'll put away the begging bowl and get cracking with the show. In this episode, I speak to George Jun. He's a professor at the University of Northern Colorado and the author of The Black Eunuchs of the Ottoman Empire, Networks of Power in the Court of the Sultan, which was recently published by IB Taurus. It's a fascinating book on an exotic but surprisingly little known subject. In this conversation, we discuss the enigmatic role that eunuchs played in the empire for many centuries, as well as the broader question of slavery in the Ottoman Empire. But I started by asking George Jun what got him interested in this area in the first place.
Well, I first went to Istanbul in the year 2000 because I'm a visiting professor at Boğaziçi University. And I was I had a friend, and he and I would just walk the city, you know, and we just get out someplace and just walk. We haven't been to this neighborhood, that neighborhood. And so a couple times a week, we would just wander. And we went over to one area of the city, and there was a tomb of a black eunuch. And in the meantime, I had made friends with Dr. John Freely, who is now emeritus from there. And we were at some little gathering, and he wanted to know what I was doing since I had talked to him last. And I told him, you know, just wandering around. And he said, you know, maybe we should get together and do a book. And so being a wise guy that I am, I just remember seeing the tomb of one of the black eunuchs. Says, yeah, maybe something on the black eunuchs. And he looked at me seriously. And he said, George, that's a great idea. Hardly anybody's done anything on that. And he just went on. And I was stunned because I just thought I just made up a joke. And so I got talking with him some more. And he was able to show me that there was not a lot of information on it, and the information that was there was scattered. And so I just began working on it to see where it would go. And I just kept on uncovering all these different histories and so forth. And so the whole thing was a complete surprise to me to get started on it. But I just, I'm just the type of person that I just want to satisfy my curiosity sometimes when I can. And it was an academic subject, but also because I'm in Africana studies here at the University of Northern Colorado, I look at slavery on the United States basis and an international basis, and this was something that was completely new to me.
Yeah, I definitely want to address that, because the book addresses this broader issue of slavery in the Ottoman Empire, which is still not really a very well understood subject. I mean, slavery in the empire was very widespread, but it took various different forms, and it wasn't highly institutionalized. I mean, it relied on kind of local conditions and whatnot. And I think one thing the listeners will be interested in is how slavery in the Ottoman Empire compared, for example, with the transatlantic slave trade. What were the differences and what were the similarities?
I think the similarities is if you're taken as a slave, no matter what slave system, you're completely cut off for the most part of your family, friends, and so forth, and you will never see them again. And in the Ottoman Empire, the slight difference was that the Ottomans took slaves from Europe as well as from Africa. So there was always a chance, even though slight, that some of the European slaves would be able to get some contact with some of the relatives. So it's not that one system would be better than the other. It was horrifying for anyone caught up into that system. But when you begin to look at some of the aspects of it, you'll start seeing some differences. So, for instance, in the Ottoman Empire, as opposed to the Atlantic slave trade, the Ottomans evaluated the Africans that they took in, and they found out that some had management skills, some had musical skills, and so forth. But in the transatlantic slave system that went to the United States, the Caribbean, and Central South America, they were just usually just put out in the field to work. And also in the Ottoman Empire, They did have some, depending on what area, did have slaves working in fields and mines. But for many other places, such as around Istanbul and major cities, they worked in people's houses. So that was some of the, just a couple of the differences that you would see.
And obviously the book focuses on the eunuchs, the imperial eunuchs of the Ottoman court. And they kind of rose to prominence, as I understand it, really at the end of the 16th century. And up until then, the Ottoman palace had been dominated by white eunuchs, generally from the Christian populations in the Balkans and the Caucasus. But after then, the black eunuchs began to rise in prominence. And before long, the practice of white eunuch making was almost completely obsolete. So what was behind this shift from white to black eunuchs in the Ottoman court?
One of the things that happened is that the white eunuchs, they were able to have a lot more control over the sultan and over the government because they had families, many of them. So they could start opposition to the throne or to certain people in the empire that were in control. But the African eunuchs were completely cut off from families. Plus, both of them could not have children, but both of them were cut off. But the European eunuchs were able to form their little groups here and there, and sometimes family members and so forth, and were a rival sometimes to the sultans. But the African eunuchs couldn't do that. And also the African eunuchs, because of their distance from relatives and family, it was almost a symbiotic relationship. Everything they had depended on the sultan, and the sultan depended on them to assist him. But when the white eunuchs became too powerful and too corrupt, according to the literature, then one of the sultans decided to begin using the black eunuchs in the latter part of the 1500s, as you said.
And the book contains some pretty gruesome descriptions of the various castration procedures of how men were made into eunuchs. I found myself kind of wincing as I read a lot of it. And
yes.
It shouldn't be surprising, really, but it was extremely brutal because so many of them died. I mean, there was only a fraction of people who were actually castrated and potential eunuchs actually made it to becoming, you know, court eunuchs in the end.
Yes, that's true. And that's why the eunuchs were the most valuable, most expensive of the slaves, because sometimes, depending on who was doing the process of making these young boys eunuchs, the death rate could be high as 70, 80, 90% sometimes. So that made them very expensive because somebody had to buy them to make them eunuchs. And so you invested a lot of money. And then they also, even when they became eunuchs, another thing that you saw in the book is that there has to be, some of them actually got married as adults. They couldn't have children. And some of them actually did have a sex life, but they did not have the equipment. Now, the main difference between the white eunuchs and the white eunuchs, they just took out their testicles. But the black eunuchs, it was called shaved. Everything came off. And to do this, there were what's called nicknamed eunuch factories. One was in Ethiopia, and there were some others that were scattered around. And according to Muhammad the Prophet, he forbade Muslims from making eunuchs. So how did they get them there? They purchased them from the Christians and the Jews that did not have that forbidden aspect of making eunuchs, at least specifically did not have that. So that's what was going on there. And these boys, they'd be wandering around in their towns in Africa, and all of a sudden people jump out of the bushes and everything, drag them off across the Sahara, make them eunuchs, and then many of them ended up in the Ottoman Empire, and if you were considered to have a lot of talent, you may be able to enter the palace of the sultan or in the sultan's household with a chance of rising up. And if you didn't get into one of those, around Istanbul, there were a lot of very rich men who had their own personal harems, and so they would work in those harems. So if taking the numbers of eunuchs, there's probably at any one time over 1,000 eunuchs that were just around the Istanbul area.
Yeah, because like you say, the eunuchs weren't just part of the imperial court. They were, as I understand it, they were owned by a lot of different notable people. It was kind of almost a status symbol.
Yes, that is correct.
I mean, the black eunuchs of the imperial harem, over centuries, as you mentioned there, they collected this tremendous power, actually, and authority, with extensive connections and responsibilities. Could you just outline some of those responsibilities, particularly of the chief black eunuch, who was the most senior eunuch within the court, and who had a kind of direct hotline to the sultan? What did they do, and what kind of influence did they?
Well, the chief black eunuch was one of, depending on what year, anywhere from almost a couple hundred eunuchs in the royal household. And so they were in charge of pretty much everything, keeping the household together, making sure the food was bought in for the sultan and his family. They would also work as far as different kinds of pacts, you know, like for peace of war, they did that kind of thing. They're also responsible for getting the goods and so forth and monies and oil and everything to the holy cities of Mecca and Medina. They were in charge of the caravans that went there. And they were also in charge of the waqfa for the people of the harem, the women of the harem and others. So those were, they were investors and so forth. And then after they got fired, if they didn't get killed, after they got fired, they were sent to Egypt. And in Egypt, they were responsible for taking care of all of the monies that the sultan had in Egypt. So for the different types of crops and everything like that, the chief black eunuch would be in charge of that. They also built fountains, and there's still fountains around the cities that they did, because as a good Muslim in those days, there wasn't a lot of good water, so you build drinking fountains. They built a mosque near the Topkapi Palace. There's a mosque of one of the chief black eunuchs that was built in the 1700s that's still being used. So they had a lot of things going, and they were in charge pretty much of anything that went on in the harems. So, you talked about building wealth. There was one of the palace eunuchs who, when he was retired to Egypt, he had 3 shiploads of his own personal items that was to go to Egypt. He had to leave behind his 300 horses. The chief eunuch was given 300 horses. He had to leave behind his mansions, and he had to leave behind his personal slaves. And one of them, from 1600s until the 1700s, the city of Athens was actually under one of the eunuchs. And even the governors of Athens, from about 1645 to the 1760, that was the eunuch's, chief black eunuch's, personal area. So even the governors and other officials reported to him. So you're talking about people in today's money would be worth millions of dollars. And also, if you wanted to see the sultan, you had to give a little bit of coin here and there, so to speak, to get to see the sultan. And you had to be a top official. You just couldn't walk in off the street. But the thing that you have to remember with all this money and goods and stuff is that the eunuchs were slaves of the sultan. So anything that the eunuchs amassed, when the eunuch was either kicked out of office or died or was killed or whatever, the sultan got all of that.
Because, of course, eunuchs, for obvious reasons, didn't have any descendants.
No. And sometimes many of the chief eunuchs helped to raise the young sultans. And so there was a connection that was there as well.
I mean, they sort of rivaled almost the Grand Vizier of the Ottoman Empire. It's quite remarkable. And what's striking to me was that we don't really know any of their names. You know, they're not really household names or household figures. They're almost completely voiceless. How did you find the details of their experiences in the sources? Were there any particular sources that were particularly striking?
Yeah, I had to do a lot of running around there. In the book and the acknowledgement page, I mentioned some libraries that I had to go to around the city. I went to the library at Bouazici University, and I also haunted other libraries, university libraries. And it was tough, because sometimes I would go in and spend a day and get 2 sentences. And then, so I just kept at it. And It was very difficult, but every time I unearthed something, I was really ecstatic because the information isn't hidden, it's just scattered, and it takes a lot of work. And now I'm very glad to say that two students that graduated from Boazichi University, two young women students are in graduate school, and they're pursuing this type of work. One of them started before I started, and she's pursuing this. And there's also another woman that graduated this past year, and she is pursuing this research. So I would not doubt that there is a lot of information out there that I have no idea even exists. So when I look at my book as kind of a jumping off point, and I hopefully there will be other interested people that can get more details and find other documents. I wouldn't be surprised in libraries all around there are other documents and so forth. So to me, it's kind of an ongoing thing. It's not the end all. Hopefully I get people interested to continue this research.
I mean, there were points in the book when I was reading about these court eunuchs walking around and court dwarves and black eunuch dwarves guarding the harem. I kind of sat back and thought, my word, this really was a completely different world.
Yes, definitely. And but you also have to understand too that the sultans, according to the people around them that believed in, the sultans walked in the shadow of God. So therefore, there was a lot of power that they had because of that. And technically, everyone in the empire was a slave of the sultan. So now you can see that so much of this power, and to have a person that is right next to the power, the chief black eunuch, he's the only one that has access to the sultan 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That is a lot of power that that person, the chief eunuch, can amass. And many times when looking at or hearing people talk about the eunuch, the chief black eunuch, because his name is the Kisler Ah, or the ruler of the girls, they think that is just a harem. This guy was right beside the sultan, advising the sultan, working on different kinds of things, had his own set of spies, did all kinds of things, and was in charge of all of the other eunuchs, the 200 eunuchs that were in the palace at that particular time. He was in charge of them.
How did you go about the research? I mean, can you read Ottoman, or were you relying on secondary sources?
Yeah, there's a lot of language things. So I had to go through Ottoman, there's Turkish, there's also kind of a crossover as Ottoman and Turkish. Ottoman was being reduced and Turkish was coming up. And so it's almost like another language. There are people who can read this transition language, but only some of it, because it's really a combination of the two. So those three, plus English, plus French, plus German. So I had to get people to help me to do that, because I do not read Ottoman at all. My Turkish is at a very elementary level. I did take German in high school. I have conversational French. And so I really had to find people. And when I first came back to Greeley, Colorado, there was a student, one of my students here, told me about a Turkish student who was in town doing some work. And he made sure we got together. And this student, this Turkish student, helped me with the first translations with Turkish. So I also had, because of the other languages, German and French, I have a couple friends on the department here that helped me translate some of those. But it was difficult. And then I would go to the library, and like I said, my Turkish is minimal, but I knew the words that I was looking for. So I knew, Darasada Ah, which is another name for the black eunuchs, was Darasada Ah, and Babasada Ah, which was the white eunuchs. So I had a handful of words, and I would just go into the libraries and look for those words and other words in the indexes. And then I would copy those pages and then bring them back. And some of the students in the Department of Western Languages and Literatures at Boazichi University and some of the faculty would translate for me. So I had all kinds of material that was out there. And so I think it worked very well for me.
I also want to address one particularly interesting detail in the book, because you talk about how eunuchs, they had a kind of heritage in Muslim history, but the Ottoman practice of eunuch making and the kind of institutionalization of it, it was inherited from the Byzantines. And yes. Particularly after the conquest of Istanbul in 1453, it was one of the many Byzantine customs that were kind of inherited and adapted.
Yeah, they inherited the use of eunuchs and also the seclusion of women. The Byzantines also did that as well. Not that no one else is doing it, but the Byzantines did that as well. And I believe what happened is that the Ottomans, wanting to start their empire, took what they would see as some of the best ways of governing and use those and put them in place. So you're actually correct when you say that the system of eunuchs was inherited from the Byzantines, and also the sequestering of royalty, because the kings and rulers of the Byzantines were sequestered, the same as the Ottomans did. So you couldn't get to the rulers and except under certain circumstances. And also the separate women's apartments were also part of what they inherited from the Byzantines. So they didn't come in and create this whole system. They inherited the system, tweaked it, and made it work for them.
And also, just to conclude, I want to address how the image of the eunuchs changed, because towards the end of the empire, the popular image of eunuchs, they became this kind of distasteful relic of a kind of backward age. You know, there was almost an embarrassment about it, particularly in the early Republican era, of course. How did that image change through the 19th century and in the early 20th century?
From what I can gather, the embarrassment part is real, because as they start moving toward the system that Ataturk and the people around him put in place, they got rid of the harems and they got rid of the eunuch system and so forth. And there was an embarrassment because many of the now Turks are trying to become more European in a sense and are trying to push some of this information behind them. But also during the reign of the black eunuchs and in the reign of the white eunuchs, there were people outside of the household, the Sultan's household, that were very jealous and did not like the fact that they did not have the access to the Sultan as these people did. So, for instance, the head of Islam, the Sheikh al-Islam, they would get into trouble sometimes because of the fact that they tried to influence the Sultan, and in a couple of cases, the black eunuchs had them killed. So you have the all different kinds of things that are going on as people are trying to push themselves and pull themselves to get close to the Sultan, to influence the Sultan, but they cannot get past the chief black eunuch and his minions that he has there around the Sultan. They were also responsible for things like if the women in the harems, they did this a few times, if the women in the harems started arguing and fighting and trying to gain more power, it was the responsibility of the chief black eunuch to take them out on the Bosphorus, have them put in canvas sacks with rocks in the bottom and drown them. So they could pretty much do anything they wanted to except for crossing the Sultan. And there were a lot of people who were very upset with them having these folks around them. And also there is you also have to look at the fact that many European tourists would go to the Ottoman Empire. So they would see these black men with power, and they could not understand it. How in the world could these Ottomans let these black people be so high in power? That's ridiculous. They shouldn't do that. They should get rid of these things because of the fact that they should have some white people in there. And so there's another, there are these stories that come through that the Europeans would write back and show up in the newspapers and books about this ugly situation in the Ottoman Empire with these black guys almost ruling the Sultan. So there's a few things that are going on at the same time. So there's internal jealousy, the external racism, and also the Turks are trying to modernize themselves and move away from something that people like Ataturk and people around him would think as despicable part of their history.
That was George Jun. You can find a link to my Hürriyet Daily News review of his book, The Black Eunuchs of the Ottoman Empire, Networks of Power in the Court of the Sultan, over at my website armstrongwilliam.wordpress.com. Remember, subscribe to Turkey Book Talk, if you haven't already, via iTunes, Podbean or Stitcher. Rate the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, or like the Facebook page in order to spread the word and help other people find the show. If you want to email me with your recommendations or abuse, you can do that too via my email address, which is williamjohnarmstrong@gmail.com. That's John with a H. Also, don't forget that you can support the podcast via my Patreon account, donating on a per episode basis. Many thanks to current supporters Andrew Cruikshank, Özlem Beyarslan, Steve Bryant, and Aaron Ataman. But until the next episode, thanks a lot for listening.